Hello, people. This is the Extra Spicy Podcast. I am Justin Phillips.
And I'm Soleil Ho.
On this episode, we speak with Jimmy Famuyiwa, the restaurant critic at the Evening Standard.
The job particularly, and we could like go on and on about difference between US and UK critics, but it's been like well covered that like, you know, there's a sort of different sense of maybe like rigor and like priorities in some senses, like, you know.
It is kind of funny that we are having a British restaurant critic on the show, but I think there's a lot of interesting parallels between his career and mine, except he actually has been on TV. I haven't. So he's actually superior to me and way cooler. In fact, we got along so well that we ended up talking for a whole hour. So we are splitting up the interview between this episode and the next, so you can hear all about what capers Jimmy's been through in the UK and just where we see the practice of restaurant criticism going from here. So I think it's safe to assume that a lot of our listeners do not read the Evening Standard because they're very American.
Yes.
And I assume that your readers don't really read the Chronicle, and that's totally fine.
No, yeah.
So I guess to fill in some blanks that might be present, can you tell our listeners a little bit about just what you were up to before you became the chief restaurant critic? Because I know you've written about film, entertainment, media, so many things.
Yeah.
Can you just give us a primer on what you've been up to?
So I've been a journalist for, I'd say, about 15, 16 years now, pretty much from when I left university, college. I started working for men's magazines, the Maxim, which I know was a magazine in the US as well as a magazine in the UK. And entertainment, film and TV and music was kind of one of the main things I did. But like all kind of people that are staff writers, and certainly in that age, you didn't really have specialisms. You were kind of asked to be an expert on any number of things, particularly if you're working on a lifestyle publication or in features, like, you know, you sort of something that comes across your desk and you're like, oh, okay, I guess I love Formula One racing for the next 500 words or whatever it is. So I became quite au fait at that. And then, you know, throughout that time, and I worked for other publications and started writing more film and doing more film interviews and a lot of TV. And throughout that time, food was always there as something that I'd write about occasionally. And it just kind of came to the fore a little bit. And then I started working in-house as an in-house staffer for the Evening Standard, which is the London newspaper in the UK. And it's one of the few, you know, sort of regional papers that does have, I'd say, a bit of a broader sweep, like because it's London and because it's the capital and it's kind of, it's a local paper, but it has kind of, and it comes out in the evening, it's given out free. And so it's kind of comes out at a different time to the other papers. And so it kind of occupies a bit of a unique spot. I was essentially, I edited the back section of the paper. And so I was responsible for the food pages, and I would kind of be responsible for the copy of Faye Mashlow, very sort of renowned London food critic, who had been in the job for, you know, since the 70s, I think it was. So I was a known quantity to the paper. I left, I was freelancing and writing all sorts of different things for them. There was an opening at ES Magazine, which is the Evening Standard's kind of supplement title. For a restaurant critic, they were having guest critics, like a weekly kind of rotating, like, oh, here's a celebrity and here's a musician and here's a politician and here's various food writers. So it's quite different every week. Because I was a known quantity, I got asked to do it. It went well. The editor really liked what I'd done with it. I did another one. She really liked that. And it kind of just went from there, really. This was late 2018. And then, late last year, amid the sort of weirdness of the pandemic, I was asked if I would like to move to the main paper and take on the chief restaurant critic role because Faye Mashlow was leaving after 48 years, which I don't think anyone expected. She's gone on to work somewhere else and she's still kind of writing for the paper in some capacity. But yeah, so that's it really. I was kind of in a position, I was in the box seat having written about a lot of things for a while. Food became something that, Yeah, I just kind of, you know, it just came to the fore fairly naturally, fairly organically. And like, you know, you know what it's like. I'm sure you get asked to do these things and sometimes it sparks something and people see you in a role that maybe you wouldn't have necessarily put yourself up for.
So Soleil, one thing that I realize I've never heard directly from you is your restaurant critic origin story. You know, I've known you from the day that you walked into the Chronicle and I'm like, there's a critic, this is awesome, and that's it. But how did you get to that point? Like, I realize I don't know what led you down that path. I feel like people
sure.
would love to hear that.
So I have been writing in food publications since I graduated from college in 2009. And I was always working in restaurants at the same time. So it was sort of a side job that I would do once in a while. And because I didn't rely on it for my income, I just wrote whatever stories I wanted to, which was super great. So I would do little features on local restaurants when I was living in Minneapolis. Once in a while I would do reviews, but I actually didn't really know how to do it. So I definitely I probably botched it a few times, whatever. And I don't know, for some reason, it was such a cool thing to do both, to cook and to write about restaurants at the same time. And I kept doing that for a long while until eventually the writing part really took over my life. And it kept calling me out of the kitchen in a way that was kind of unsustainable and not great, I think, for my career as a chef. So I just picked.
And see, what really intrigues me, because I feel like at some point, right, you had to be like, okay, I can write about places, but also like my ability to criticize or constructively criticize or be able to explain to people why something's great and why it's not is now at a level that I think I can turn this into a career. You know what I mean? Like, when did you hit that point?
Yeah, no, that was scary. I think I did it officially in 2018 and I was like, I'm going to be a freelancer. And I immediately got this job that I'm in right now. so that didn't last. But considering how awful my tax return was, like, that's fine. But the thing is, the interesting part for me was I didn't think I would be able to get this job. You know what I mean? Like, I was really mm-hmm. interested in seeing who would get this job. And it wasn't until people like Daniel Patterson, a local chef here and, like, you know, big name Michelin starred chef, started saying like, oh, yeah, Soleil. Like, he mentioned my name in a list of names that he thought should take the job. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, how does he know who the hell I am? And two, like, why does he think I could do this? And then, of course, like, then there was a story in the Washington Post about, you know, who might be taking the job, which is so funny that they care.
You're right.
And they mentioned, like, Tejal Rao, and they mentioned me. And I was like, wait, what? And I was just sitting there in my living room in my wonderful $800 apartment in Minneapolis. And
ooh,
I know, right? And I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna do it. I'm just gonna try. And so I just put my name down, applied, and then the next day, I think, Paolo, our old boss, called me.
So you hadn't even applied yet and people were already talking about you taking the job.
Yeah, and I think that's what it would take, right? For someone like me
yeah.
who does not feel qualified ever for anything to actually think about it. Like, all these people have to say, like, actually, no, you should do it. Like, I'm very yeah. hesitant. And yeah, I guess it's worked out.
Yeah, it's been chill. It's been pretty cool.
I didn't believe that I could get the job. And I didn't believe that
yeah.
I should get the job before
yeah.
I got the job. And I'm curious about, like, the sort of emotional, mental journey you might have gone through.
Mm.
When did you start to believe
yeah.
you could do it? And did you always believe you could do it? I don't know.
I don't know. I guess I maybe did just approach it with a bit of when it was that first kind of guest slot on ES Magazine, which was, you know, the first time I'd written a restaurant review. I'd written kind of little. I used to work for another kind of freely distributed magazine in the UK in London called Shortlist. And we used to have little like bar reviews, like gastropub, I think we call them here, like kind of bars or kind of restaurants where it's a bit pub leaning and approachable, but little kind of short appraisals of those. So, you know, I was quite kind of plugged into writing about food in that sense. But I guess I do know what you mean, and this is what's interesting in that I've definitely been in articles where, like, I've been reading articles about, like, you know, the homogenous nature of the of food media, where you and I get mentioned, you know, as like these outliers, like, you know, something was going on. And I think it's only later that I've kind of thought, and there's probably a bit of a lingering, like, oh wow, like this space wasn't somewhere that I ever saw someone like me or someone from my background. And, like, you know, as we started off saying, I've written about a lot of different things, and you feel like, oh no, I've not got the kind of intense, like, you know, miles on the clock of, like, this is my thing. Of so yeah, I guess that maybe I was aware of it, that oh, it wasn't something that I thought, oh, I should have that should be mine. But I think maybe in some ways that made me approach it and come at it in quite an honest way, and it wasn't like I was thinking, oh my god, this is such a great opportunity, and oh, I can see myself in this, like, role. Like, I just approached it. I was a fan of the medium. I was, you know, I read kind of the A.A. Gills and, you know, Jonathan Gold, obviously, in the US, and Grace Dent and Jay Rayner in the UK. And so I read these critics, and I was a fan of them, and I was a fan of the medium, and I was interested in food. And so I had a real sense of how I'd do it. But I don't think I felt too out of place, really, because maybe just because I'd just grown so used to it. Because, like, you know, media, magazines and newspapers in the UK and in the US, I imagine, is such a white industry. Like, there aren't many, you know, black, of Nigerian heritage. Like, there's so few people like me that you just kind of get used to it, I think. And that's not necessarily a good thing, but you kind of just, you become a bit immune to that sensation. And I guess if you kind of cross over into working at these publications and you've been lucky enough to get, you know, that foot through the door, then you just kind of, I don't know, you just kind of accept it, maybe. So yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a long roundabout way of saying that I don't think I felt too, like, oh my God, that could never happen for someone like me. But equally, I was aware that, you know, that I didn't feel like any sort of, oh, I'm owed this, or this will be easy, or, like, this makes total sense. Yeah.
I do feel like you're probably you are a lot more qualified than I would be for this job, because you've actually been on, like, cooking shows.
yeah. Well, that kind of came after. So, mm-hmm. So I guess the Evening Standard, the chief restaurant critic job that I've been in now for, what is it? What are we, 3 or 4 months into the year as we're speaking? That job came following. So it's kind of, they're self-fulfilling in a way. Like, you know, I hadn't been doing the magazine restaurant critic job for that long before, you know, TV shows were kind of, you know, getting in touch and kind of, because I think, and I think that is another element of, and I'm sure I'd love to know your take on this, because I think because there'd been so little change, so few new faces and fresh voices in the world of kind of food writing, and specifically restaurant writing, because they're jobs that no one wants to leave or ever leaves, and there wasn't much of a pathway because of that, because they, you know, were quite, even the people that are in them that have been in these jobs will admit that it's this quite stodgy, unchanging landscape. As soon as you start getting some new people in, there is this real clamour and excitement, I think. And, like, you know, not from everywhere, but from certain parties, I got that sense of people wanting to talk to you and people wanting to invite you to things and get your perspective and things like that. And obviously that comes with its plus points, but then you're kind of also, yeah, you're aware of, yeah, it can be strange, basically, to be kind of, you know, hurled into that scenario.
Yeah, no, I totally get that, because the first year I had this job, I was probably traveling at least once or twice a month to do conferences and just speak at schools and all of that. And I felt like I had to say yes, right? Because they were excited to have me and hear about all of the stuff I was doing. I was held up as one who would dismantle, like, decades old tendencies in the food media that started before I was born, right? And you have to be really careful to not get high off of that too, and just start to think like I'm the messiah, right?
Oh, completely. And you're just trying to do the job as well in some ways, and you're just trying to kind of learn and be better and and sort of change things where you can, but also just kind of survive a little bit and kind of like, you know, and you're sort of, yeah, you're right, you're held up as this master.
I am so curious about your thoughts just as to the visibility of the role, just how you feel about being, because it is an illustrious job, right?
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, I sort of try to block out a lot of that stuff because I just think my personality is such that, like, I don't know, like, you know, particularly after it was announced, there was a lot of kind of people rightly wanting to, like, note that, you know, this was like an end of an era, because, like, you know, Faye and The Standard and what that represented in terms of London restaurant culture and spanning entire eras and stuff, and so there were people that wanted to, like, have that outpouring. And then obviously someone like me, someone from my background, getting the job is, like, hugely significant in a lot of people's eyes. And so, yeah, there was a lot of, like, this is huge, this is enormous. And I was just kind of trying to, like, block that out as much as possible, because, like, you know, I feel like obviously it's huge, obviously it's significant. My gut feeling when I was asked was, like, I really want to do that. Like, there wasn't really any apprehension. Like, it felt like, wow, that is really big. But, yeah, I do think there is that weird thing, isn't there, where you feel like a representative, and you feel like, you know, I've had this in other forms throughout my career, because you know, I've been on staff at places and as an editor, and that's quite stressful. And then you think, okay, I want to leave, but then that takes you out of, you know, you're one of the few black people that's kind of in a kind of editing position. And so it's weird. It's kind of, it can just feel a bit like you sort of need to, like, clone yourselves at some time, like, because it's, yeah, it can just feel very strange and a little bit overwhelming when you think about it too much. But I think my journey with it has been to sort of try to, like, own it a lot more and just be that representative, like, wherever I can, like, not let it be. It's a tricky thing to navigate, though, isn't it? Because and loads of people have really write about this really interestingly, and people are having great conversations about this, which feels like the next phase after getting kind of greater representation and getting the odd kind of seat at the table is, like, okay, like, you know, on what terms? Like, what are we going to be talking about? How much are you going to push for covering a certain type of cuisine or a certain type of restaurant? And how much do you just kind of want to, I don't know, just kind of cover what, have the sort of freedom that the other kind of restaurant critics would? But then, but yeah, I feel like the place I'm at with it now is that yeah, I'm very aware of it and that visibility. And, you know, I do MasterChef in the UK, like, go on that as a guest judge relatively regularly, and have done for the past couple of years. And it's really striking to me that generally the people that spot me in the street and say, aren't you the guy, are other black people, or, like, other people of color. And I totally get it, because it's like, it's huge. Like, you know, like, I know I can, like, spot like a Nigerian surname, like a Yoruba surname, like, you know, a million paces, or, like, if I get emailed and it's like, oh, that's like a shortened form of, like, a Yoruba name, and I look it up and I'm like, and I feel that, and I understand, like, what that means to, like, have somebody that, but I also think that it's important to not let yourself be, like, overwhelmed by, like, you know, I have to represent the viewpoints of this entire kind of section of people or whatever, because I think you'll just go mad and it's not possible.
In the food world, there is, especially now, like, this trend of publications at least saying they want to amplify, you know, black and brown voices, right? Yeah. You know, they have these unique perspectives, and look at these hires that we're making. Mm. And Jimmy, for you especially, you dabble in other forms of media and do it really, really well. And it's the same way that Soleil does. So it all makes me wonder, why still write? why still participate in print journalism, right? Like, what is the personal reward from that when, you know, you have these opportunities where you could do so much else? And not to say it's better, like, we all love print journalism, but I would love to hear you talk about, like, what resonates with you.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's a really good question. And I guess, from my point of view, writing is the, you know, the first domino in it all. Like, that is the thing that sets this all in motion. Like, you know, being able to express yourself in a certain way and write in a way that is hopefully compelling and hopefully original, and that is the core of it, really. And so I feel like, weirdly, doing the other things, it's almost made my kind of love of writing even greater, like, do you know what I mean? And my sort of feeling that is central to what I do. And, you know, by all means, please play that back to me when I'm literally, like, on deadline and, like, cursing writing and, like, Googling fake own death, easy ? Because, you know, it doesn't feel like it when you're doing it, but there's nothing better than that feeling. And that is at the root of it for me. And that is kind of, I think there's something, I don't know, I guess, like, generationally as well, like, I am sort of, I'm 37, so I'm sort of, you know what, like, very old millennial. And I came up in the era of, like, magazines when, you know, it was kind of like the party was, like, the sort of real boom times of what, like, kind of early noughties was kind of fading. And I still do really just love writing. And I think that you can, like, you know, if you take something like the John Boyega interview that I did with GQ, which kind of went like really crazy, and like loads of people shared it, and it was like a really crazy moment. Like, I just don't know if you get that. Obviously, there's a video version of that, or there's a podcast version of that, and they'd all be great. But I just don't think that's the only sort of form that you can do that in, that you can sort of tell that sort of story in that way and be that expansive, and, you know, and not just journalism but books and things like that. I've got a real faith in it, and I think that you know, it can be quite a crowded marketplace in terms of people that can do a little bit of everything. And, you know, there are people that are such fantastic genius level visual minds and, like, masters of, like, social media and audio and things like that, but I think really writing in that sort of very pure, simple way is quite a hard thing to, like, coach and to fake. And that's kind of what I love about it as well. Like, you know, and you're right, because it's harder, and I feel like there is a little bit of a sort of old media attitude to it, because I feel like it's getting harder and harder to get people, to hook people with that. And I think it's a real question for restaurant criticism specifically, and food writing in general, throughout this year, because I feel like, you know, everyone in my industry, and specifically in my role, it's been a really weird time, hasn't it? And it's been like, you know, kind of the most privileged people on any paper or publication, and now suddenly the ones that are kind of like, oh my God, there's no restaurants. How can we keep my column going, or how can we keep this going? And it's been quite, you know, in a sort of horrible way, like, even though I've been through it as well, like, it's been kind of fascinating to watch the different ways in which people have kind of adapted or not. And so, yeah, I think that is probably why, like, the, you know, short answer, I think I'm okay at the other stuff, but I feel like I've got, like, real experience, real understanding of writing, and sort of a sense of my voice, and you're always getting better and always trying to improve. And I just believe in it. I believe in, there's nothing like it. Like, when you kind of read something that just nails it and has such a sort of perfect voice and perfect kind of, yeah, it tells a story so compellingly. Like, you know, I kind of, yeah, there's nothing like it, I think.
You're listening to the Extra Spicy podcast. We'll be right back after the break. You can support this podcast and the newsroom that creates it by subscribing to the San Francisco Chronicle at sfchronicle.com/pod. I'm Solejo, and we're back with Jimmy Famurewa, the restaurant critic at the Evening Standard. I'm so grateful that Jimmy said this about wanting to fake his own death when writing, because I hate writing. I hate it. It makes me miserable. I have a friend named Maurice Ruffin, who's a novelist, and he always talks about how, you know, writing saved him. Writing makes him so happy. If he's not writing, he's like so, he feels terrible. And like, for me, it's the opposite. Writing makes me feel awful.
I'm right there with you. Like, okay, so what are your thoughts each time that you have an assignment and the deadline is approaching? What are your most drastic thoughts? Like, as that moment approaches?
Oh man, I think about like becoming a trad wife and just like having a just like marrying some like rich dude and like having a ton of babies and just like never talking to anyone and just like having a quilting blog. I don't know, like I think about going away forever.
Oh my god, I think about quitting. I'm always just like, man, screw it, I'm just gonna quit, bro. I don't care about this anyway. I don't care. And it's usually right when the draft is done and I'm about to submit it. I'm just gonna quit, bro. That's it.
Oh my god. Yeah. Oh no. Every week when my newsletter is due, I just feel like I should just die. I should just go. And I realize like, oh, that's why. Like, that's why I'm so like freaked out and depressed.
Oh man. I think part of it too is like being edited is an intimate process. Like as a writer, to have someone as soon as you submit something and sit there and you can kind of watch them go through and tell you what you need, what needs to be better, what you need to fix. You know, that's kind of an intimate process. But I think we exist in our own heads most of the time. Cause like, so like in your pieces, you have to take a direction that is specific to you. Like there's a line of thinking that you have to follow, and that can be like a lonely road, and then you have to share that line that you're following with other people in a piece, you know what I mean? And I think that can make us feel, it can feel like there's a lot of pressure, but you know, it can be like a lonely endeavor, I think, you know what I mean? Because you're kind of stuck in your own head about it.
Oh yeah, for me it's like when someone flips over a dead log and there's a bunch of millipedes and like bugs underneath it.
Yeah.
Like that's writing for me. I don't know which part I am. Am I the millipede or am I the log? Or am I like the dampness under the log? But that emotion accompanying that image is writing for me. That is like filing a story.
But the other part is it's hard to imagine. I'm not even going to lie to you. Like the days where I'm like, man, I'm just, before I like put in a column or something where I'm just like, I'm just going to quit. It's hard for me to imagine doing something that isn't writing. Usually that quitting is like, I'm going to write some other stuff for some other place, something that's way easier, but it's still in the same field, you know? And so I think there is like a truth to really loving this stuff and feeling like you don't know what else you would do. And we just go through the process over and over again.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. I mean, you know, if all else fails, we can just become trad wives.
You casually mentioned the John Boyega piece that you did for GQ.
I felt like, oh God, am I being like really presumptuous here? Obviously, am I famous? But then you also don't want to humble brag it. Like, I don't know if you've heard of a guy, John Boyega, and I did this little story that. But yeah, I mean, obviously, that was like crazy, and I just don't think. I was very aware as that was happening. I was like, you don't get these very often. It was just the real sort of synthesis or coalescing of various very hot button things in a sort of perfect moment. And, you know, I've got to say, I've got to give credit there in a way to my, you know, my sort of editors and the people that like kind of came to me with that story, because they just kind of were like, look, tell it in this way. And I hadn't really, you know, I'd done a lot of celebrity interviews, but I hadn't really had I hadn't been given the sort of space and encouragement to just go for it in that sense. And and it was really nice. And yeah, the response to it was really great. And yeah, you just kind of, everything is, you know, Yes, it's quite a weird one, but yeah, it's good. But again, it's, you know, it's strange because obviously I'm predominantly known for food, but then, you know, that had nothing to do with it. And so it's that weird thing of sometimes you feel a little bit like, I don't know if you feel this as well, Soleil, but like people will not take you as seriously as a food critic or a, you know, a thinker or a gastronome or whatever, if you're doing all these other things as well, like kind of that there's this sense that, oh no, you mustn't sort of muddy the water of your own sort of brand or whatever by doing these other things. And I mean, obviously that's nonsense, but I do find that sometimes in my head I'm like, oh no, like, is that, like, sometimes I'll think of doing something or be offered something and I'll worry that it's kind of, yeah, too out of the remit of what people know me for or whatever, which is a really weird thing.
Yeah, no, people get easily confused, but people also don't give readers the credit that, you know, they deserve. Like, people are smarter than that, right?
Yeah, you'd hope so, yeah.
Right, yeah. We're talking about, like, how you want to exist as a writer in this role and as a critic and the complications of that. And, you know, you talked about how Faye had, you know, she characterized an era, you know, air quotes.
If
you were to articulate, right, like, what kind of era, if you want to be so presumptuous, like, you would herald, like, how would you characterize it?
Yeah, my writing and the kind of era of writing. I guess I am... you know, you can't fail but be inspired by and, like, absorb what's around you. All the kind of great writing that's being done around food and its, you know, intersecting with culture and race and issues of climate change and the environment and provenance and things like that. And I feel like, even though I feel like there are writers that are doing that in a much, you know, in a much more kind of overt and a sort of much stronger way than me, in terms of, like, I feel like I do try to absorb some of that and just think about, okay, so what's the best vehicle to tell that sustainability story? Like, I don't think I could, and again, this is about the outlet you're working for, and I do feel like I, you know, I came up in a time where the tone of the publication you're working for and you're kind of, you know, you are serving that to a degree. I think what's really good now is we're questioning those widely held presumptions about tone and the reader. Like, you know, the amount of times I'd been in, you know, I'd worked for magazines and, like, men's magazines, and it'd be like, oh, this is our reader that we're aiming for. And we'd have, like, you know, these kind of brainstorms that, you know, we'd kind of have these company away days and whatever. And I mean, they wouldn't ever say he's white, but, like, it was, like, implicitly, do you know what I mean? It was always one guy, and it was, you know, and it wasn't. But anyway, I digress. My main thing now is just, I think, like, so say something like sustainability. There's a great restaurant in London that was originally in Brighton on the south coast of England called Silo, that is, you know, very well known, particularly in Europe. And I think the New York Times might have written about it as well. And, you know, really real sort of cult adherence to sustainable practices and zero waste and things like that, but done in a really kind of interesting way. And so I think that is something that I can funnel that story through, and kind of I feel like that is, so I guess if I thought of any kind of era, then I guess it is just kind of just being open and aware to, like, what's going on in the world and surroundings, and not being sort of, I guess the weird thing is that the job particularly, and we could, like, go on and on about difference between US and UK critics, but it's been, like, well covered that, like, you know, there's a sort of different sense of maybe, like, rigor and, like, priorities in some senses. Like, you know, I think that my take or my sort of feeling is that I'd just like to represent that sense of curiosity, that sense of inclusivity, and just sort of things that do, just to bring in a little bit more of how things really feel. Like, it can seem sometimes like food content within publications can occupy a bit of a parallel universe of, like, you know, the gloss of how we'd like things to be. And I think, like, wherever possible, if you can do it with humor and with subtlety and bring people along and just kind of, you know, really kind of delve into the, because really, if you've spent any time in a city or talk to anyone, then you know that it's all enmeshed and all interlinked. And, like, you know, you'll sort of, in London, you know, you'll go past the Caribbean, like, patty shop here. I was literally, this lunchtime, I was just going past, and it's like the queue coming out the door is completely different, like, demographically, like, in terms of, like, age and, like, and so that is a story that is really interesting, but you don't hear it enough, and that is, like, the story of cities and stuff. And so I guess that is the thing that I'm kind of locking into, and I'm sort of trying to reflect wherever possible.
So that's all we have for today, but stay tuned next week for part two of our interview with Jimmy Famuyiwa. Thanks again to Jimmy for being in conversation with us, and to Erica Carlos for producing this episode. If you're enjoying Extra Spicy, please share it with a friend and give it a rating on Apple Podcasts.
And remember to send us any questions or voice memos you have about food, life, or anything else for our Dear Spicy advice segment at extraspicy@sfchronicle.com. Thanks for listening.